This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. Today we throw off all inhibitions and go natural. Nutritionally, that is. Our guest has made a life work out of finding the truth hidden within the hype and hope generated by marketing experts and shares his findings on his website, nutritionfacts.org. Dr. Michael Greger is a founding member and fellow of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, author of the wildly selling book, How Not to Die, public health director at the Humane Society of the United States, and a frequent guest on this radio program. Dr. Greger, welcome back to HeartWise.
So glad to be here.
Okay, let's see where natural is better. We begin with acne. If you're a teenager and so afflicted with this nasty malady, you may want to listen closely. Dr. Greger, what is the latest? Help us here.
You know, the latest is easy, cheap, natural remedy, barberries. Dried barberries. Now you say, wait a second, what's a barberry? I've never heard of a barberry. Well, you have to go to a Middle Eastern store, a Persian store, because there's a famous Persian rice dish that's made with rice and barberries, these little red dried berries. And you say, well, that seems like a lot of work, but you've got to hear what this new double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled clinical trial found. 12 to 17-year-olds with moderate to severe acne. So we're not talking just a little. I mean, these people had a problem.
Yes.
Half just got a placebo sugar pill. The other half got about a teaspoon of dried barberries three times a day for a month. That's it. Uh-huh. All right. And the results were remarkable. After 4 weeks on the placebo, on the sugar pill, no change, as one would expect. You didn't do anything.
Right.
All right, just as many pimples as before. But in the barberry group, a 43% drop in the number of zits and about a 45% drop in inflamed zits. That's extraordinary. That spoonful costs about 8 cents. No reported side effects, right? They're healthy for you anyway. You're just eating dried fruit.
Yes, yes.
The only potential concern is that I would encourage people not to eat them during pregnancy. We just have no data on barberry consumption during pregnancy or lactation. So during pregnancy, you always want to be careful about doing anything different to your diet. But other than that, what an extraordinary, powerful, cheap intervention for acne.
Now, Dr. Greger, you speak often here of these, what you call double-blind, placebo-controlled studies. For those who may not know, I want to just take a moment here. For those who may not know, this is like the gold standard. What does it mean when you say double-blind, placebo-controlled study?
Yeah, so this is definitely the gold standard. The reason it is because there's a very powerful placebo effect. If you go to someone and say, I am going to give you a pill that makes your heart race, that increases your heart rate, and you give them the pill, they take it, guess what happens? Even if it's a sugar pill, there's absolutely nothing in it. You just lied to that person. Just them thinking it's going to increase your heart rate, their heart rate goes up. I mean, that's amazing. So it's not just placebo effect, this pill will make you feel better, and people take the pill and just say, well, okay, I feel better. No, the placebo effect, actual physiological effects. Like, oh, I mean, you don't have control over your heart rate just sitting down. Well, your heart rate actually goes up if you think you just took something that makes your heart rate go up. So there's a powerful placebo effect. Now, that's amazing. It shows how much effect our mind can have over our body. But at the same time, it kind of messes up when you're trying to do a study.
Sure.
So let's try to do a study to see if something like barberries actually helps you or not. And if you say, "Oh, you have acne, I'm going to give you something that may help with your acne." And so you give someone barberries, maybe the acne gets better just because they thought that it was going to be effective. So that's why you have to say, well, wait a second. Let's split people with this medical condition like acne into two groups, and let's give half of them the placebo, the sugar pill, and let's give the other half the actual thing we're trying to test, the barberries, and we don't tell the person which group they're in. So they don't know if they're taking the actual barberries, so you put them in a big capsule so you don't know if there's actual barberries in there or just nothing.
Right.
you don't know which group you're in. And the reason they call it double blind is that even the researchers don't know which one is. They just have a code. So then there isn't even a kind of an expectation bias where the doctor secretly knows who's getting which and might act differently around the patients. And so nobody knows until the very end, till the code is broken, who got the active treatment, who got the placebo. And then you see how much better the placebo could just work just because there's this expectation it's going to work. And so, but the treatment effect is how much better than the placebo. These people with acne both got pills that they thought were going to help them, but only half actually got the active pills. And so you can see how much better that did. And so that erases the placebo effect. So you actually find out how much that actual intervention, whether it's a drug or a food or anything, is beyond just what the mind can kind of heal itself. And so that gives you a sense that there's actually something active about what you just did.
And we can trust those results because there is not those other elements in there influencing the outcome. So that's what you talk about that often. And I think those are the ones you are looking for. Would I be right in saying that?
That's always the ideal. The problem is it's very difficult to do with food. It's easy to do with drugs.
Yes.
Because drugs affect people at such tiny concentrations, you can pop it in a pill. But how could you test to see if broccoli had a positive effect, right? You can't put broccoli in a pill. People tend to notice if all of a sudden you're eating broccoli or not, right? There's no, and so it's much more difficult. Whereas something like this, where the active component can actually be so tiny, like some of these spices, like turmeric or these dried barberry, something where you're just taking a tiny amount, then you actually double blind, then you can actually have a placebo. Sometimes you can blend something up into like a shake, like you blend up walnuts or you blend up fake walnuts, walnut flavoring. There's actually not any walnuts, but you're drinking a smoothie. It tastes like walnuts. You don't know if you're getting the real walnuts or the fake walnuts. So then there are ways you can still control for the placebo effect using food, but it's not as easy than drugs.
All right, very good. We're talking with Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org. By the way, listener, if you'd like to hear an interview with Dr. Greger on his new book, How Not to Die, go to heartwiseministries.org, and you can click on the radio button there, and his interview will be there from a past show. Very interesting stuff. And how's the book doing, Dr. Greger? I hear about it everywhere.
Oh, that's fantastic. So 4 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Very excited. In fact, now it's going to be translated and published in 20 different countries, everywhere from Albania to Mongolia. It's just so exciting that there's so much not only interest here, but interest around the world in How Not to Die.
Fantastic. How Not to Die is the book. Okay, the next study that caught my eye here, and you also have it in your volume 29 of the latest in clinical nutrition, was dealing with mother's milk and colic. This may surprise some people here. Share with us what you've learned.
Yeah, this is another really powerful result. Now, what colic is, colic affects about 40% of young infants.
Yes.
So that's a lot.
Yes.
And it's characterized by prolonged periods of inconsolable crying. Now, this is something that's been basically dismissed by the medical profession, which hasn't really treated it seriously. But, I mean, it can be serious. It can contribute to postpartum depression in the mom. It can interfere with breastfeeding. And in the most tragic, severe cases, can even lead to death of the infant at the hands of a parent with this shaken baby syndrome, where these infants just crying so much that the mother basically loses control. So this is a serious condition, should not be minimized. And, you know, they're not just being crybabies. Colic is pain. These babies are experiencing gastrointestinal discomfort, intestinal cramping, which causes them the pain. That's why they're crying. So the question is, what can we do for these babies? Is there any way we can treat the cause? There's a number of drugs that have been developed to try to take care of it, but there are side effects. Some have been pulled from the market because they cause so many side effects. There's been this desperate search for an effective treatment. Going back decades, the most effective treatment we found has been elimination of cow's milk protein from the diet, thinking of some kind of an allergic response, because you can actually see antibodies, this immune response to bovine proteins in infants with colic. Basically, if you take infants, these are breastfed infants,
right.
So it's not like they're on dairy formula, but it's the mothers. When the moms drink milk, the bovine proteins, the cow proteins, get into their breast milk, and then they're transferring these cow proteins from the mom's breast into the infant, and then that is what's causing the colic. And so if you do a dairy-free diet for the breastfeeding mothers, you get this dramatic disappearance in colic in infants, and you can do these randomized trials where you'd give half the mom's, you know, like soy milk, half the mom's regular milk. Don't tell them which is which. You can disguise it with flavoring. And indeed, the moms that stop drinking cow's milk can eliminate colic in the majority of cases. And it can happen within a day. Within one day, if a mom stopped eating dairy products, stopped drinking cow's milk, all of a sudden colic disappears like magic in the majority of babies. And so this is something that every pediatrician should know, every mother should know, every family should know.
Well, this begs the question, Dr. Greger, if mother's milk has within it elements from her own diet, wouldn't that also be true of other things that she may be eating that we know are carcinogenic to the human being? Is she passing those on to the kid too?
Yeah, I mean, breast milk is funneling nutrition, yes, including entire intact proteins. Now, as adults, we break down proteins. Yeah. Adults, unless you have some kind of leaky gut syndrome, you don't tend to get these complete proteins into our bloodstream. But as babies, when they start out life, they have immature immune systems and need to get the natural antibodies from the mother into their system. And antibodies, which are, you know, tools used by our immune system, are proteins. So the only way the baby is going to kind of get some of that immune protection from their mother is to absorb fully intact entire antibody proteins through the gut wall. And so nature designed the baby's gut to be porous, to be leaky, to accept these large proteins. The problem is it can also accept foreign proteins like cow proteins, pig proteins, chicken proteins, these proteins that, you know, kind of weren't meant to be in our body, and our body sees them as foreign, sees them as kind of, you know, invaders, and can cause this kind of inflammation, this immune response, which can lead to this colicky episodes, as well as problems down the road, such as type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune reaction. And one of the triggers may be exposure to bovine insulin, the insulin from cows, which make it into the babies because the mothers are drinking it.
My. The take-home message here for moms is, you know, you want a healthy baby, you need to be healthy in the way you eat food. The healthy choices that you make will move right directly into your baby's life. Wow. We'll take a short break. When we come back, let's talk about happiness. We all want to be happy. Are there things that we can do? Are there things that we can eat that will make us happy? Let's find out from Dr. Greger on our return, so stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham with your biblical prescription for life. A patient recently came up to me in the office and asked me this question, "Dr. Markham, do you really believe that God heals?" The answer to that question is yes, and our biblical prescription for life comes from Psalm 6, verses 2. David believed as well, and he says, "Lord, have mercy on me, for I am weak. Heal me, for my bones are troubled." Well, God heals us in His time. It might be through a miracle. It might be through a change in lifestyle, quitting smoking, exercising more, eating better. But we have been promised that God will heal those that have a relationship with Him in His time. Do I really believe that God heals? Yes. So did David. You can believe too. Just claim this relationship with your Lord and Savior. For more, go to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Before we get back to our guest, I want to extend to you an open invitation to visit the HeartWise Ministries website. Why? Because I believe that's where you'll find many of the answers you seek as you strive to improve your physical, mental, and spiritual health. Begin with Dr. James Markham's blog, insights into the very latest developments within the ever-changing world of health and well-being. Then submit a question to the Ask the Doctor section. Your query will be answered by physicians who practice medicine every day. Need a little more information? Watch the Heart of Health Live television episodes or listen to these radio programs. Check out the Heartwise Healthy Eats link, where you'll find restaurants that offer healthy choices. And finally, don't forget to leave your prayer requests. The Heartwise staff will join you in placing your needs before God, the ultimate physician. All that and more are waiting for you at heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org. Stop by today. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Dr. Michael Greger. He is the author of How Not to Die. You can listen to our interview about that book on the heartwiseministries.org website. Also, nutritionfacts.org is his website. Learn about the book and other things that he has done. Amazing stuff. I also have a lot of questions for you, Dr. Greger, about happiness today. You mentioned this in several of your videos that you sent out. Happiness, is this more than an emotional challenge that we all face? Are there things that we can do? Are there things that we can eat that will help us be happy?
I was really surprised to find out that indeed there are. You know, if you look in the medical literature, you see 20 times more studies published on health and depression than there are on health and happiness. But there's this new field called positive psychology that is investigating ways to not just help with stress, depression, anxiety, but actually what can we do to improve our mood, not just to health, but beyond health, to actually to make us feel better, to make us feel happy, positive well-being. We've known for a long time, not surprisingly, that people that are happier have a reduced risk of physical illness. That's not surprising that healthier people are happier than sicker people. The question is there actually a cause and effect relationship between happiness and health? So, I mean, is it direct? Is it indirect? Ideally, to establish cause and effect, what we do is an interventional trial where you kind of randomly assign people to different mood levels. You know, you're going to be happy, you're going to be not happy, and then you see who ends up healthier in the end. And you say, well, how could you possibly do that study? Well, what they did is they took over 100 volunteers, the half of which, they picked them, so the half of which were, you know, happy, relaxed, pleased. The other half were more anxious, hostile, depressed. And then they actually dripped the cold virus, the rhinovirus, the virus that causes the common cold, into people's noses. They were able to do that because they paid them a lot of money to do that. And, you know, just because we're exposed to a virus, someone who's sick coughs in our face, doesn't mean we necessarily get sick because we have an immune system to fight it off. The question is, whose immune system is better? And it turns out those people who started out happier, who felt better, actually their immune systems were able to more successfully fight off the common cold. Same thing. They repeated this with the flu virus as well, which is an even more serious infection. So we now know that happier people are healthier people, not just because, oh, they may treat themselves better, but they actually have improved immunity. So the question then becomes, what can we, is there anything we can do, anything we can eat, anything in our diet that can actually improve our happiness? So we started out with these cross-sectional studies, a snapshot in time, found that people that eat more fruits and vegetables are indeed happier. People who eat lots of fruits and vegetables are more, higher likelihood of being classified as very happy, feelings of optimism, kind of on down the list. The largest study was done in Great Britain, actually found a, what's called a dose-response relationship, meaning the more fruits and vegetables we ate, the more happier people were. The people with the highest life satisfaction and happiness were those eating 7 or 8 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. The question is, well, what's going on? Well, you know, fruits and vegetables have vitamin C, which is a cofactor in the production of dopamine, which is this kind of zest for life neurotransmitters. They also have packed with antioxidants, which reduce inflammation. So these are some of the mechanisms that we think give people who eat more fruits and vegetables this greater feeling of engagement and meaning and purpose in life, in addition to feeling happy. In fact, even on a day-to-day basis, if you take people and you measure how much fruit and vegetables they're eating, and then you measure their mood the next day, the more fruits and vegetables you eat on day one, the better you feel on day two. But to get to the maximum level of happiness, life satisfaction, took more than 7 servings of fruit, 8 servings of vegetables a day. So that is a tremendous amount of healthy food, but it's worth it for our mental health.
My, my, you have been a proponent, of course, of the whole food plant-based diet, but now we know that it has the added benefit, the icing on the cake that can actually help our emotions. We can actually be happier because of the way we feel, the way we can think. This only makes sense, Dr. Greger, because when you have cleaned out your arteries, when you have gotten the sludge and the oil out of your body, oxygen and water, which are essential, are going everywhere freely. Am I on the right track?
No, absolutely. I mean, so that would explain why we think better,
yes,
why we have an improvement in cognitive function. We can think quicker, improve our memories. But the mood is kind of a different aspect. So it's not just kind of our brain, but our mind as well. The fact that it can actually kind of make people feel happier and not just, you know, get them to do better on tests.
Right.
That was just something that really surprised me. And I'm so excited that they did these studies. And my hope is that happiness, that feeling of well-being will get people to stick to the diet. Right, because you know, if in a few weeks people can actually feel better, that will give them the added motivation to stick to it, and then they can accrue the health benefits that they may not be feeling. They may not feel whether or not their arteries are opening up, their kidney function is getting better, their liver function. If they're not getting blood tests, they don't know what's going on inside their body. But if they just feel better, they'll stick to the diet. That'll give them the motivation. And then all those other wonderful things that are happening inside that they don't even feel can improve over time.
I want to end our program today. We just have a couple minutes left here on the subject of cavities and raisins. There has been a lot of talk for years that raisins cause cavities. What's the studies showing us? The double-blind placebo-controlled studies. What's going on?
So, if you think about it, I mean, raisins, about 70% sugar.
Yeah.
Sticky, you just think. I mean, there was just kind of this assumption that eating raisins would cause cavities. But, you know, it was never actually put to the test. And like so many things, you don't know. You don't want to just assume. We have science. That's what science is for. We can put it to the test and actually see. And so they took 150 folks. They split them up into two groups, half ate raisins, half didn't eat raisins. And you could actually measure the amount of acid on their teeth, the amount of plaque on their teeth, to see what if the bacteria on our teeth were actually turning the sugars into acid, which can increase our risk of cavities. And it turns out that, no, the risk actually went down after eating raisins, not up. It wasn't just neutral. It actually decreased our risk. So eating raisins may actually decrease the risk of tooth decay. And so that's kind of a nice, so it's nice to know that we can eat dried fruit, even though it has a lot of sugar. And not only does it have benefits like lowering cholesterol, but there was always kind of, well, risk benefits. Yeah, but, you know, are we going to be, you know, do we have to make sure we, you know, brush our teeth right afterwards because it's going to stick to our teeth? It turns out, no, it's benefits and benefits kind of on both directions when we eat fruit, whether it's fresh, frozen, or dried.
It just shows the power that we have over our own destiny, over our own teeth, over our own children, over our own bodies when we make these changes. He talks about not only at nutritionfacts.org, his website, but also his book, How Not to Die, available in all kinds of places. You can learn more about that at nutritionfacts.org.
I'm so happy to help people be heart-wise.
Heart-wise and happy. Very good. And until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with our good friend Dr. Michael Greger, inviting you to remain, what he said, heart-wise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on Heart-Wise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. Heart-Wise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.